Camp Boxes. Nadia.
But you have to start.
Good afternoon, everyone. We are going to talk about accounting policies and accounting estimates, paper 26. The board published the exposure draft with proposed amendments to IS 8 in September 2017. The comment period ended in January 2018. Paper 26 provides summary of feedback that the board received in response to the exposure draft. I would like to remind you about the history of this project. The project is mainly about clarifying definitions of accounting policies and accounting estimates. When the board was developing the proposals in the past, the board discussed the question of whether proposed amendments to the definitions would represent sufficient improvement to IS 8. At the time, the conclusion was that yes, the proposed amendments represented sufficient improvement for the board to go ahead with the exposure draft. Further down the line and moving on to the present and to paper 26, some respondents continue to question whether the proposals will result in sufficient improvements for the board to finalize the proposals. Nevertheless, almost all respondents to the exposure draft state that the proposals will provide more clarity on how accounting policies relate to accounting estimates. Many respondents also state that having illustrative examples would provide even more clarity on the distinction between accounting policies and accounting estimates. The team has been developing ideas about illustrative examples. We plan to discuss these ideas with standard setting during the ASAF meeting in April. We will report back feedback from the discussion to the board. The team will also develop a plan for the project. As you know, the board is in the process of developing other amendments to IS 8. Perhaps the board might decide that it wants to consider proposed amendments relating to accounting policies and accounting estimates together with other amendments to IS 8. And with all this being said, I would like to draw your attention to questions for the board on page 11 of paper 26. And the questions are, do you have any comments or questions about the paper? And also, do you feel you need any additional information about that would help you to form the view about this project?
So we didn't get any feedback from users of financial statements, and we say in the paper that we don't think that it has any implications for the project. Now, I can see on the face of it why, if you're a user of financial statements, commenting on us talking about the definitions of accounting policies and estimates doesn't sound particularly exciting. But the reason why this matters so much is because it's either prospective or retrospective application, which is, I believe, a massive deal for users of financial statements. So the fact that they haven't provided input on the face of it sort of unsettles me a little bit. But are we thinking that that doesn't have any implications for the project because we're not expecting there to be any dramatic differences in outcome? So it's not like there'd be any sort of particularly obvious effect on the financial statements as a consequence of what we're proposing, because surely just the basic idea of prospective versus retrospective must matter a lot for them. But are we thinking that it's not really going to change the outcomes that much? It's just a clarification at the edges. Is that why we're not fast?
It's the later, so I would think that there would be... Like, we did consider, actually, at the stages of the exposure draft, when the exposure draft was out for the comments. And A, these amendments are clarifications, and B, as you said, we're not changing anything in IS8. We're just clarifying... Mm-hmm. And B, we didn't think that the investors would have any obvious reasons to object to what we're doing.
Doug?
Thank you. After reading the feedback, I feel
we should be stay high level rather than go into detail to describe what's the accounting policy, what's the estimate is all about. Because as you pointed out in paragraph 43-45, IWSB is providing some more precise guidelines for the audit purposes. And the issue of this standard is whether or not you should amend retrospectively or just prospectively. That is the issue. So therefore, once we start discussing what is the condition, it never ends. So I think it's a matter of audit. So therefore, as a standard, it should stay high level. So then I don't think it's a good idea to provide lots of examples, because if we provide example, it causes the similar situation like we discussed for the example three. We are removing example three and adding others doesn't really make sense. And the other point is example about the IS2. So we included example of IS2 in this standard. However, I would agree some of the comment that should be located in the IS2 rather than in IS8, because once we put some example of other standard in the IS8, then if something happened in other standards, then we may end up including it in the IS8. So then it will confuse everything. So we should stay away from interpretation of other standard in this IS8.
Peter? So I'd like to make a general comment to add on to Nadia's introduction. And I think the key to this really is around paragraphs 10 and 11 of the paper. And when I read the comment letters, I actually found them very difficult to interpret, because I think most people were saying they thought the ED was an improvement, and most people also said they wanted more improvement. And I think it's difficult to tell exactly what some of them were saying. And it was put quite well in one of the comment letters that said it's a step forward. And I think the question is it one step forward and they think another quarter of a step would make it a bit better, or do they think it's one step forward and actually we should do another 10 steps forward, and if we don't do the 10 steps forward, then the one step may not be enough, or might even make things worse because it's raised more questions than it answers. And it's actually quite difficult to tell from the comment letters, I think, where each individual comment letter sort of ended up on that spectrum, apart from some right at the extremes.
Amaro.
Thanks, Hans. First, Peter, just comment on one question I had. When I read the paper, I had a general feeling that I was missing something about the next steps, because the feedback on 10 and 11, as Peter expressed it, gave me the impression that it's better do nothing at this stage, or in doing nothing, eventually go high level as suggested by Taka, instead of adding guidance, things like that. But then when I got to the end of the paper, I had two concerns. One is the one mentioned by Sue, users. So maybe a question. Users didn't comment, as they generally don't comment in documents. But in other instances, we try to get their feedback and their input to projects. So the question is, have we tried and we didn't succeed, or are we going to try? Going to try apparently is not in here as a next step. This is one common question. And then comes to the work being developed by the IWASB, because it's mentioned here there is a proposed revision of ISA 540, and that we have been discussed. We will follow or monitor the IWASB activities in this area. So, but I didn't see actually what monitor means here. Is we are going to see the final revised ISA and then consider it, or we are just monitor seeking? So I'm really confused at what to do. If I read only the feedback, I would say, no, do nothing. Well, but we're missing users here, and I think it's important. And then when I got to the IWSB, well, what monitor means? If you are not going to do anything, why monitor? And if we are going to monitor, are someone expecting for us to do anything?
Can I respond to
yes,
your
comments?
Thank you. About investors, as I said, at the early stages of the comment period, we did discuss whether we should outreach to investors, and we didn't feel there was particular need. It wasn't like segment reporting or any like, you know, other...
Because you didn't think there'd be a material effect on them. So.
Even, yeah. That's correct. So, but if the board, after today's discussion, feels we should outreach to investors for whatever reason, we'll be happy to do so. But as I said, it wasn't... They didn't respond. We did specifically concede and specifically concluded not to. But yeah, please feel free to instruct us otherwise. In terms of IASB, in terms of monitoring, of course, they're a separate organization and they are publishing their own standards. I think what we mean by monitoring is to ensure consistency, broad consistency in our key messages, and that's our prime objective of working with the IASB staff, so that the market and users at large are not confused, like, you know, they say something and they say something different. That has been our focus, consistency of messaging. And as I said on the paper, we feel that at the moment we are broadly consistent in terms of how we define accounting policies, accounting estimates. And finally, your point about next steps, which is the point Peter made. Just maybe I'm sensing like the board might decide that at the moment, you don't have sufficient information about like what to do next with this project. And the first step we're going to make in addressing this uncertainty, we're going to talk to ASAF, as I said, in April. And hopefully this will provide us with like a little bit more, because this project has been borderline all along, as I said in my NDT app. Like, is it sufficient improvement or not? Everyone agrees it's an improvement. But the question is it sufficient improvement? This question existed in the past. It continues to exist based on what I hear from you. As I said, as a first step of addressing this question, we're going to talk to ourselves. Hopefully, there will be some insight from that. If, again, this, therefore we have this question too in the paper, you feel there might be other steps that would help you to make the decision, we're happy to make those steps.
Sure.
When I commented on users, I don't think I disagree with what the staff's sort of conclusion was. My point was more to point out that I think just saying that with a full stop in the paper probably doesn't send the best signal. I think it's because we don't think there's a material effect on them, and I think if you explain why, that to me personally makes sense, but I think that's important not to just say, you know, we don't have any input in that, you know, that's fine. That's not what you mean, but that might be what people read into it. In terms of next steps, for me, this project was always a little bit, as you say, borderline in terms of whether there were enough benefits for the effort. And I must say that the one piece of feedback that really profoundly depresses me in this paper, which makes me really question whether we're going to get anywhere with this, is in paragraph 22. I thought the one thing that we'd done a reasonable, you know, it's difficult to make the line between accounting estimates and accounting policy, but I thought the one area where we had a good chance of helping with clarity was by making it more clear that accounting estimates included situations where you needed to apply valuation techniques and these sorts of things. And if we've still got pretty sophisticated respondents, like the large accounting firms and a regulator, still remaining confused about whether or not that's within the scope of accounting policy, even though we've gone and made all of these extra comments on accounting estimates, that makes me really wonder how successful we're going to be in terms of clarifying the line between the two things.
Maybe I could just comment on that, and Nadia, if I've got this wrong, please correct me, but the way I understood their comments was that they weren't disagreeing with what we said in the ED, which is changes in valuation techniques or estimation techniques are changes in estimate, and we said that very definitely in the ED. I think the thing they questioned was that the definition of accounting policies still includes the word practices, and they were concerned about the consistency between those statements. I think it was not so much uncertainty about the outcome, and so they thought there was some sort of disconnect there.
Yeah,
between.
I understand that's what their point is, but I can't imagine we're ever going to be able to come up with a definition of accounting policy that doesn't have some sort of general thing like practices in there. And the fact that we were so specific on the valuation aspects and estimates, and we still didn't get that message across, I can't personally imagine how we could redraft it in a way that we'd be able to address something like that. So it just flags for me the difficulty of getting the clarity that we might have been searching
for. But one thing we might be able to do might be not to tinker with the definitions, but to just insert the paragraph that says, by the way, changes in estimation techniques or valuation techniques are changes in estimates. So we could at least achieve that, even if we didn't do the other
things. Ms.
Yeah, the way I read the comments that we've received is very much that people appreciate to have kind of more pragmatic guidance, but don't feel that the definitions themselves help. And I have a problem with that. And I have a problem with, in fact, stating that changes in valuation techniques are changes in estimates. I'm fully happy having valuation techniques triggering a prospective application because they emanate from a world where you have lots of technology changes, improvements, so you don't want to have an hindrance in having a change in valuation technique because you want to give the most chances having the best quality estimates ultimately. And the uneasiness that I feel with is trying to align the definitions with the outcomes. Either so policies have to be retrospective and estimates have to lead to prospective. I would personally prefer having an estimate be more narrowly defined. As being, you know, and I was comfortable, by the way, with the change, because to me, you had a change in the economic environment, something that was couldn't be seen as being relevant to the previous period, could not have been seen as having relevance to the previous period. So that you had a change, and by definition, it had to be prospective because of that lack of relevance to the previous period. Evaluation technique, if it had been available in the previous period, would have been relevant to that previous period. It could have been applied. So to me, it's really a change in the way you arrive at a particular estimate without any change in the economic circumstances. So to me, that belongs to, in fact, the methods, the ways you get to your reporting amount. And I would be more comfortable having this broad definition of accounting policies and take the valuation techniques as an exception for the reason I explained and say that to facilitate the change and evolution of valuation techniques to have a prospective application thereof. I think in my perception, we would have clearer definitions and still achieve the fact that when you have a change in those valuation techniques, you apply prospective application.
But of course, this distinction between accounting policies and accounting estimates is not just about a retrospective or prospective application. The thresholds for accounting policies and accounting estimates are different. The threshold for the changes in accounting policies is higher at the moment than threshold for changes in accounting estimates. And by doing what you're proposing, Francois, as far as I understand, by putting valuation and estimation techniques in accounting policies, yes, you will, I'm providing this exception, you will achieve prospective application, but at the same time, you will raise the threshold for changes in these valuation and estimation techniques. And the board explicitly discussed this issue in the past and decided not to proceed with this idea.
Gary.
Thank you. It a number of thoughts. I don't think I have a question in all of this, but just observations. And not as you know, this project was near and dear to my heart as someone who lived on the other side for a long time with the ambiguities and inconsistencies and unanswered questions. So I think I agree with Todd, we should really keep whatever the final product product is at a high level. I think even if we did nothing beyond what's here, I think we have a good product, and I think it justifies the work to finalize it. And yeah, I think, of course, anything can be better, you know, as some people suggested, to go far enough. But I think in general, the feedback was most people agreed that this was an improvement, and most people supported most of what's in there. So to me, that's sufficient evidence. Even if you just stop where we are now, we did a good thing. I think if we wanted to work some of the issues a little bit further, I'd be fine, but I just don't think I would overprocess it. I think in no particular order, comments on techniques and valuation estimations and so on, paragraphs 28 and 29, almost everybody agrees with the proposal. These are estimates or change in estimation processes. And I think it has to stay at that, because we are constantly encouraging, if not requiring, people to continuous improvement in how you do estimates, how you value things, and so on and so on. And then economic research and financial institution research and so on keeps going with better ways to do things than you did a few years ago. To say that these are an accounting policy change goes in the exact opposite direction of our push and others' push for continuous improvement, how you do these things. So you kind of can be practical and make it easy, you know, for people to do it. Therefore, it becomes an estimate, you know, maybe perhaps in some cases a fact and circumstance change. On paragraph 23, on practical expedience, I would support, if we wanted to try to do something in this, I lost the debate in the materiality practice statement and so on. But again, I don't know that there's really necessarily a quick answer on it, you know, but the world exists with practical expedience. That's how books close. And to ignore them at some point in time, they're going to probably have to be addressed. We didn't do it in the various materiality projects. I think on on the example on interchangeable inventories, I actually agree with Tosh, we should keep it at a high level. But if we think that's important enough to address, you know, looking at all the work that we're doing, where would we do it if not in here? You know, maybe someplace in the disclosure initiative that it is tactical and very detailed, but if it should be done, I don't know of a better place to do it in. And I think on paragraph 46, where it says it's not clear when something's a correction of an error versus an estimate, I think intuitively people know when it's an error. And here the example had was, the information was available in prior period. Well, we've got plenty of guidance, as do the auditing industry, about the information that has to be available at reasonable cost and et cetera, and contemporaneous in time and so on. I'm not so sure I would do much more in that space. And then I think lastly, on following the IAASB, I mean, they're writing their proposals for a different purpose, but the end of paragraph 55, when you say we're generally consistent, I would just ask at some point in time to come back with us, where are they inconsistent? It's one thing about level of detail, another thing about audit reports. But to the extent we're operating the same space, I think you should at some time come back, where are we inconsistent? That's it. Thank you.
Nick?
I'm not at all surprised that we didn't get any comment letters from users on this issue. It's at the less obvious end of the spectrum for users. And I think Sue's clarification is important, that this is because we didn't think there's going to be a big change as a result of this. If we still feel we need to go and get some views from users, I think we just have to be very focused where we see CMAQ members, really. I'm not sure we would get much more than that.
Mary?
First I was concerned because I was like, yep, two voices I most in agreement with are Tuck and Gary, and then Gary said something that threw me into disagreement. So equilibrium was restored. but I think it's really, before I go to a specific point, it's really important that we remember, and I just checked, that this is a maintenance project. So it's a narrow scope amendment that we're doing to address something that came out of interpretation committee project. I think we have to be really, really disciplined about avoiding scope creep. And I think that's something we always have to be disciplined about, but from this paper, it sounds like more than usual, the comments that we have back are people bringing out lots of things that have been hanging around for a while that they'd really like us to address, and using this as kind of the excuse. And it would be major scope creep to address that. So I think in terms of answering the challenge that Peter posed about should we do this or should we not, it should be saying we're either going to do a narrow scope amendment or we're not going to do anything. Now, lining up with that is the point of very definite agreement with both Gary and Tuck is I think we should keep this high level. I don't think we should start adding in lots of examples, and I think we should not try to provide a lot of the guidance that was suggested in terms of give us guidance on how to make this determination, guidance on how to make this determination, et cetera. So I think it comes back to, kind of on-off switch about do it or not. I am a bit worried that some of the things that people raised as comments are things that they're really asking us to change the approach. And I am a bit concerned that if we don't finalize something so that we have a basis for conclusion to express that this is not an open issue of debate, we decided not to change the standard. People will say, well, we raised it and you didn't provide guidance, and therefore it's an open question. So, for example, I don't think there's any lack of clarity in IS-8 about when you have to do retrospective versus prospective. There may be a question about, is this change an estimate or a policy so that triggers one or another? But I think the standard is clear about when one is required versus the other. And to submit a comment that says, well, we think we need more guidance on when you need this versus that, unless when you peel it back it's about when is something impracticable, I think is kind of throwing up some dust that I would like to settle. And the point that Gary raised about practical expedience, when I read paragraph 21, said it doesn't address it because only the board can have create practical expedients that are not subject to materiality considerations. I agree with Gary that practical expedients are a way of life, but you have to demonstrate that an entity-specific practical expedient still gives you materially correct application of the standard. And somebody raising it makes it sound like there's a whole gray area of practical expedients that are entity-specific that, as long as you call it a practical expedient, you don't have to consider the materiality effect. So that's, again, something that I'd like to remove any uncertainty about. So in terms of what next to do, I think it's right that we should consider it as, I think it's to consider whether or not we should move forward. I think that we have heard that there's progress, and I think it's just whether it's enough progress to warrant finalizing. I think we should not consider expanding or the scope or more fundamental reconsiderations about the nature of a policy versus the nature of an estimate, at least on the back of this project. I think it would take a huge amount more time, and I'm not sure it's the overall highest priority. And I think we have to think about not leaving uncertainty because of not responding to some of the comments that were raised. And I would not support lots more examples or guidance on the application of judgment.
Jen Chow.
Thank you, Hazel. Just a quick. When I read paragraph 22, I have same feeling as Sue said that for me, I think valuation technique, it's clearly accounting estimation, but why people raise this issue. Also, if you look at the cost formulas of inventories, actually it's clear it's accounting policy, but why people are still question whether it's accounting policy or accounting estimation. And also, Peter mentioned the paragraph 10 and 11. I think those feedback is very important. So we need to think about how can we move on this project. I think the message we got is clearly the people actually not only focus on or satisfy simply changing the wording of the definition of accounting policy or accounting estimation. Because if you look at these two specific accounting treatments has been in place in practice so many years, but it's still not clear. So I think changing the definition is one way. We need to change it to improve that, but it's not enough. I think the message we got that people would like we have more guidance, examples or guidance to clarify those accounting treatments or those accounting methodology or technique, whether they meet the definition of accounting policy or accounting estimation. So from my point of view, if we could provide guidance or examples, why not? Based on our revised, you know, definition of accounting policy or accounting estimation to clarify those things and to meet the, to demand those feedback we got, I think we can, I think we should do. Otherwise, simply change the definition. It's too general. It's really general. What's the meaning of practice? What's the meaning of the principle? Still, it's general. So I think we need provide guidance, even examples to support, to illustrate those improvements to the definition.
Ching-Ching, I think you're making a very good point in the sense that this project is very conceptual. It's not about debits and credits or required disclosures. It talks about broader things. In a way, it's akin to the conceptual framework. It raises matters of that kind of level, you know, very high level concepts, accounting policies, accounting estimates, things like that. And it is like people, and I think this is exactly what people said in their comment letters in a nutshell. You know, it's a step forward. We understand how accounting policies relate to accounting estimates better now as opposed to two different notions. So I think we did make progress. But as you said, they want to see on some sort of example, in some sort of way, how these notions or this concept should be applied in practice. And I'm just jumping ahead a little bit, but this is exactly what we plan to discuss with ASAF in April. Because even if, like, we did consider this method of providing more examples, and we are developing a position for ASAF, because we're not going to provide illustrative examples with specific fact patterns or specific answers. What we're aiming to provide is an illustrative example that would demonstrate thought process. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this is the accounting policy, and this is what it says. Within this accounting policy is there are accounting estimates, because these items, these inputs cannot be measured with precision. Whether ASAP will like it or not, we'll see. But this is something we're exploring. I don't have a definitive answer, but we're trying to deal with this.
I think we're trying to resolve those issues. At least these two issues come out. People are aware whether valuation techniques or cost formula for inventories should be accounting policy or estimation. There is a different understanding in practice. So at least those issues should be addressed somewhere. I think maybe these standards, but it's possible by this chance we improve these standards and to illustrate or to explain what, you know, to clarify at least, yeah, to improve our standard, to provide support for those people to implement our standards appropriately.
Nili, Françoise, and then Blanche.
I'll be quick.
I'm not trying to put any pressure on
you. Mary might accuse me of scope creep with this question, but I'm wondering two things. One's a question for Nick is, how strongly is your sense that users feel about retrospective versus prospective? In my very limited sample, I've sort of heard mixed views that retrospective is nice, but we're only talking about 1 year of messiness, and then, you know, it's fine going forward. And then my second question is for Peter and Nadia. In terms of this notion that changes in accounting principles, they have a different threshold. I'm looking at the paragraph 14B, and it's talking about changes in accounting principles, results in financial statements providing reliable and more relevant information, which seems like it could also apply to changes in estimates as well. So where I'm going with all of this is it's going to be quite difficult, it sounds like, to truly get precise definitions between estimates and principles. And what if we simplify the standard and just said prospective across the board? Yeah, so scope creep, I got it.
Yes. And yeah, Nick, yeah. Nick, I should answer that.
Yeah, so just, I think it all depends on circumstances. It's impossible to generalize. It depends on which particular issue this relates to.
We have talked to CMAC about this, so maybe it's good to go back and share with you the feedback they gave us
3 years ago. I think when we work on maintenance activities, we should keep the objective of having standards which are understandable, and so that people can understand where the requirements come from and why decisions have been made. To me, retrospective and prospective, the distinctions are very important. If you no longer have any delineation between what is a change in economic environment and what is a change in the method, you have a change of method for very good reasons. That is put in a definition so that it triggers perspective instead of recognizing that it is by exception. I think if I explain why a change in valuation technique on a trade-off basis, it's better to go prospective because it will benefit ultimately to the quality of financial reporting. I make my reasoning clear. If I, to get to prospective, I have a group of changes which, in fact, are different in nature, and some of which naturally would lead to prospective. Some others you could question whether they should. I think you just bring absolutely no clarity. You don't help people understand how we get to requirements. So you, from an education perspective, I think it's not the right thing to do. Then you have people who just look for, they need to know what to do, but they don't know why they do it.
For lunch. Question, Nadia or Peter. Is there any connection between this project and the work that was done for IAS 8 about accounting policy changes and agenda decisions in the Interpretations Committee?
Not directly.
No? Okay, thank you.
Okay, we break for lunch until 2:00.